This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
In 2011 and 2012,
that's awesome.
Fighting to stop it. But, you know, when they made it their number one priority, they made it their number one priority and twisted a lot of arms to get there. Used a lot of money on public commercials to educate the public on how Right to Work was going to bring lots more jobs and better wages into the state of Indiana.
Any proof to show that worked?
No, both of which are very false claims. We've not seen a huge influx of jobs. Wages haven't gotten higher. In fact, we've had several jobs leave Indiana to go to non-Right to Work states. You know, we've seen jobs leave to go to Illinois and Ohio and Wisconsin, all non-Right to Work states. So we're not seeing anything of what they promised yet.
So how has this affected your union membership in Indiana?
You know, right now we are holding strong. We've not seen lots of members drop off because of Right to Work. The work of our strong locals, making sure that we have great campaigns when we have contract fights. The way they did Right to Work in Indiana, you are not eligible to leave your union and stop paying dues until after you have a new contract. We had several locals that went out and got new contracts settled before Right to Work passed, which was great. And then in the ones that didn't, we've seen just really strong campaign fights to keep the membership engaged and active in the union and to fight with solidarity for their contract, which keeps them engaged in the union and not dropping out. So we've not seen a huge impact yet, but it's a lot of work to make sure our members are understanding why they have to pay their dues and
sure.
What the dues mean for them. Our teachers have been Right to Work since 1995, and our public employees have been Right to Work since then, too. So it's kind of a new learning thing for a lot of our private sector unions to understand how we have to keep our members engaged.
And how has this impacted organizing efforts in your state?
Indiana's a tough state for organizing drives and has always been a tough state for organizing drives. We've seen some good wins lately in Indianapolis. Several of our universities, the food service workers, have just recently become union members, which is great. We've seen a lot more people interested in being organized. I fielded lots of calls from workers in non-union shops who suddenly are feeling their wages being cut, their benefits being cut. And that's who it affects first, are those non-union workers. And they've been calling in the AFL and reaching out and asking, how do we get a union here? And so, in that respect, for organizing, that's great. You know, getting new organizing leads is always essential to making sure that the movement continues to be strong.
So I think one of the advantages that they have when trying to pass this kind of legislation is that a lot of people don't really understand what Right to Work legislation is. Can you tell us a little bit about what what Right to Work actually is?
Yeah, so Right to Work is just, you are part of the union and you get the contract that the union negotiates for you, but you don't have to pay your fair share. So we liken it to if you were in a neighborhood that had a homeowners association and you pay your homeowners association dues and everyone else does, but you have one neighbor that doesn't. They still get their streets cleaned. They still get their property taken care of, but they're not paying their fair share. And that's what Right to Work is. It's a hard thing for people to understand, though. And so there was a lot of public unsureness of what this legislation was. and why it was so important, which is why they went out and spent millions of dollars on TV ads to push this legislation. You know, when they polled the general public on whether or not they thought right to work should pass, a lot of them said, I don't know, because I don't know what it is.
Right.
Right.
Any chance of repeal at this point?
Well, you know, Indiana is the only state to have repealed right to work before. And we are sure we'll do it again. Last time it took about 10 years, and we think that's what it'll take this time. Our last maps drawn for our state house were completely gerrymandered. And so, you know, what we're focusing on right now in Indiana is educating and training our rank and file members on how to organize, how to build structure within their shop and also out in the community, because it's to repeal right to work, we're going to have to make this a community effort.
Right.
And we think that, you know, if we do that, we can slowly turn the tide and repeal right to work. It's not going to happen overnight, but we're sure that we can do it. And our rank and file members are engaged and ready to work to do that, you know. And like I said, we're the only state to have repealed it before, and we're sure we'll repeal it again.
That's encouraging. With us, we also have Bo Howard, who's a business agent from IATSE in Charlotte, North Carolina. And he's actually gone through a bit of that with organizing members as well in a right-to-work state. Bo, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Bo. Can you elaborate a little bit on what Becky's told us and give us your own experience and how that's worked out in North Carolina?
Well, I mean, in North Carolina, we've been right-to-work since it was probably created. You know, they teach the kids in Sunday school that unions are bad here in North Carolina. We have the lowest density of union membership in the country. So it's an uphill battle continuously to educate people, just to educate the general public, anybody you meet, mm-hmm. that unions are a good thing, that it does bring a middle class, that it does provide a wage that people can support, sustain their families. One interesting fact to the right to work laws in North Carolina is it's actually against the law for a union to have a CBA, collective bargaining agreement, with a state public sector employer.
Wow.
So we work in city buildings that we are not, it's against the law for us to have an actual signed agreement, which makes it hard in negotiating with private sector employees that bring show, you know, in odds. We do theatrical here in Charlotte, and some of the city venues, the companies that are private sector that we have contracts with and their venues bring shows into the public sector venues once or twice a year. And so they see what the rates are and the conditions are. And so it hampers us in negotiations, trying to fight against that.
So basically all public sector workers are non-unionized at this point. They don't have a collective bargaining agreement.
They're not that they're non-unionized. I mean, there's a firefighters union, there's, and postal workers, well, that's federal. Sanitation workers have unions, but mm-hmm. They're not allowed to have a contract. Teachers have unions, but they're not allowed to have contracts. It's completely, if you're a part of the union, it's a completely voluntary process. So,
gotcha.
You don't have the same rights, that you do in other states. And as far as the right to work laws, they get confused. You know, they make it sound really good. Oh, everybody has the right. In North Carolina, the statute starts out, the right to live includes the right to work. And so that's how they started out.
Mm-hmm.
They try to wrap your mind around the fact that, oh, well, you're a living, breathing human being, so therefore you should have the right to any job you want. Well, that's partly true, but at the same time, you know, you still have to go through steps to get certain jobs. You can't just, hey, wake up and want to be a doctor. You have to go to school. You have to pass exams.
Right.
Things of that nature. So, you know, being a part of the union, for me, when I started working in this, within a year, I had my union card. We work in a referral hall basis, so we actually work as a referral system for our out-of-work workers. And when we created a policy that didn't show favoritism whatsoever, because we can't, because that's against the law, to union or non-union workers, just send people based on other criteria to the job, then we saw a drop in union membership.
Right.
So we've started doing education about how what unions are, what benefits can be provided through a union, through like education, training, mm-hmm. things of that nature. And this is my first year as the business agent. In the last year, we've had a 26% increase in our membership here locally. I think the DNC probably had a lot to do with that, because people were coming in and even the workers don't understand what it is. So they think, oh, I'm working with the union, I have to get a card, even though we tell them, no, you're not required. We cannot require you to get a card, a union card. But they think they still have it in their head that they have to get one. It means more work, even though our policy is structured according to national labor relation laws and state labor relation laws to allow for people, union or non-union, to be referred equally.
Right. Well, that sounds like a great win, 26% increase of membership. That's awesome. As we were talking to Becky earlier, she was talking about the fact that her state in Indiana had repealed right to work once before. But Bo, I understand that in your state, they're looking at trying to make that a part of your state constitution.
They are. I believe it's totally a wedge issue for the midterm election coming up in November. It's already illegal in the state to contract with public sector. It's already illegal in the state. Our right to work is already the law. What they want to do in our state is to solidify it, and by putting it in the Constitution. Now, what that does is in November it puts it on the ballot for the citizens to vote. And you know, the farming communities and, you know, the metropolitan area, I'm not worried about Charlotte. It's a strongly Democrat, strongly union-favored city. But when you get out into the neighboring counties and other counties, I mean, if you look at the election map, you'll see that Charlotte's blue, Asheville's blue, Raleigh's blue, and everything else is red. Mm-hmm. So those counties are the ones that they're trying to get. I think they're going to try to get voters out in 2013 election, and they're going to use that as a wedge issue to bring out strong numbers of Republican voters. So we, all the unions and our Central Labor Council, are trying to encourage our members to talk to everybody they can to try to get their families out and say, look, I don't care how you vote for candidates, but this issue, we need you to support this. I'm your brother. I'm your cousin. I'm your uncle. This issue supports us. This issue helps us. And if we can get people turned around that way, I look at it as if the citizens say no next November when it comes up on the ballot, that may help our labor movements in a repeal measure. Of course, both our House and our Senate are both Republican. And our governor's Republican. For the first time in a long time, we've got a Republican governor. So they've got pretty much whatever they want in that realm of things. They've just butchered the unemployment insurance law. They're after workers' comp. Now they're after, I mean, they're attacking us hard. They're attacking unions harder than they've ever attacked them before in our state.
Well, Bo, we wish you the best of luck in that. And next up, we would like to talk about how to get in to a union. And one way is through apprenticeship. And I know a lot of people out there that have college degrees and can't find a job still. And I'm sure you do as well, Jamie.
Absolutely.
Also, some people just can't afford college, or maybe they don't want to come out $100,000 or more in debt. And here with me tonight, I have Todd Templeton from United Association Local 290 to tell us a little bit about the apprenticeship program there. How are you, Todd?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm with Local 290, plumbers and pipe fitters, marine fitters, and we have a jurisdictional area that covers Southwest Washington, Oregon, down to Northern California. Currently, there's 4,000 active members. We have an incredible training center, and in this last year, we've done about 82,000 hours of journeyman training.
Wow.
That's a lot.
Yeah. It's over 475 classes held for journeymen. We have training centers in Coos Bay, Eureka, California, Medford, Springfield, Redmond, Tualatin, and Salem.
That's really accessible.
Yeah, it is. And it provides a lot of opportunity if you're going to be in the trades. There is no better education you can get from the training facilities that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we currently have 43 plumber apprentices, 320 pipe fitter apprentices, They go over, it's a five-year program through the apprenticeship, and ends up being about 8,000 hours of training. And that training is done while they work full-time.
Wow.
So, and with that, they have no class fees. They have to provide some books that are offered at a reduced rate through the training center. But that helps the apprentices be able to earn a living while they're going to school. And at the end of their five-year apprenticeship, they're not stuck with a huge burden of tuitions.
$100,000 in debt that they got to pay back.
Right.
Plus interest that they're paying on that. So you mentioned that the apprentices work full-time while they're going through the program. So that means they also get paid. What kind of wages are we looking at for them to start?
There's a few different wage rates, but basically on a commercial industrial, an apprentice can start at $15.88, and that's what's on the check.
An hour?
$15.88 an hour on the check. And from there, every 6 months, provided they get their working hours, their school hours pass each term, and move on through smoothly, it ends up being about a $2 an hour raise every 6 months. Your first raise is actually a little more substantial. It's about $4 an hour raise after your first 6 months.
I'll take that.
So, yeah, it does not take long to start providing a nice quality of life for your family. Not to mention you start building up two pensions, a health and welfare, great medical coverage, and then we have a pre-funded. So what we do is there's a fund that we all contribute to as working people that provides the retirees to get the same Cadillac medical plan at a reduced rate.
Nice.
So it's really a quality of life that is offered through the Local 290.
So how do you get into this apprenticeship?
Actually, right now, they're not accepting applicants for the apprenticeship.
Oh.
But there is always a need for skilled journeymen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you could just go to local290.org, ua290.org, or you can call our facility at 503-691-5700. But you can also keep an eye on that website, because when the apprenticeship opens, it will be posted, and they usually do it about twice a year.
Okay, so there's only a certain number of applicants they could take at a time.
Right, and it just goes in waves. And what they'll do is they'll post it 30 days prior to accepting applications.
Okay, nice.
Todd, you came through the apprenticeship yourself, didn't you?
I did.
And we also have another apprentice graduate here, Willie. Will?
Yeah. So, I graduated about 2 years ago. Come basically 18, got in, and now I'm 25 and I'm making a good living wage and with skills behind me. So
nice. So Will, if you had it to do over again, would you go through the apprenticeship program?
I'm actually kind of mad at myself that I didn't do it earlier in my life, because I originally went to a welding school before I joined the apprenticeship, and they told me the best way to get a job in the welding field or industry was to either lie because I was so young or join an apprenticeship.
Well, we're glad you went the honest route in the apprenticeship. Can you tell us what you actually do in your day-to-day working that you did on your apprenticeship?
It's quite varied. You are basically at the whim of a journeyman. They can ask you to go get parts. Most will sit down and show you, but sometimes you will be a gopher. Sweeping, cleaning, but it's all kind of paying your dues to learn the trade, and the trade is very varied. I've done everything from carbon, copper, stainless, high purity. There's quite a diverse route you can go.
It's so the contractors group that we work with are the highest skilled and most reputable contractors in the state.
So an average office worker like myself, who knows nothing about plumbing and steam pipe fitting, can you give me an example of like a project you're working on or a construction build so I can get a scope of that?
Excuse me. We do a lot of, as pipe fitters, plumbers do a little bit different work, but as pipe fitters, we do heating systems, boilers. We also do a lot of stuff out at Intel, like drains, acid drains, high purity gases that they use for their chip making processes. We also, not too long ago, we worked on oil rigs that were being built in Vancouver and Hillsborough. So we do quite a wide variety of stuff.
Sounds exciting.
So during the apprenticeship program, you do the on-the-job training, but you also have classes a couple of nights per week.
Yes, two nights a week you go through class for about 3 hours a night. And they are at every training hall.
And you actually can also get college credit for those classes, is that right?
Yes, actually some people go through and finish off with kind of an engineering degree, I believe, and also a construction management degree. You can go either way.
That's awesome. And instead of coming out with debt, they've actually made money during those 5 years.
Yes, I came out debt-free, other than my welding school. So.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's great. So how does it work after that? Once you've gone through the program, do you get a job with Intel, or are you working through a hiring hall, or what's that process look like?
You're working with a hiring hall. You go through, say you get laid off. You go to the hall, say I've been laid off. They put you on the list by when you got laid off, so you basically fall at the bottom of the list. And they start working their way through the list, and when your name comes up, they call you up and say, hey, do you want this job? And you have the choice to either accept it or turn it down.
So, Will, how did you find out about the apprenticeship program?
Like I said, they told me to either lie or join an apprenticeship. So, and I looked at the apprenticeship that most seemed to be suited for me, mm-hmm. and 290 seemed to be the best.
The other thing is the hiring hall, the way it works, it just doesn't benefit the employee. It also benefits the employer. And one of the key things is, and we see it all the time, ads on Craigslist and mm-hmm. other contractors looking for qualified people. With the training facility that we have at Local 290, we can provide, and through our hiring hall, the qualified, skilled people specifically trained for what the contractor needs. We have them ready to go. All their certifications are up. Everything. So they're ready to work. If a contractor needs somebody, the following day they have as many qualified people as they need for the job. So that's a huge advantage.
Definitely.
for the signatory contractors. And I would encourage any contractor or anybody in this field that would consider running their own business or looking for the qualified help to reach out to Local 290. It's a bunch of good guys there. They can just explain the transition. It's simple to do, and a lot of good info out there.
So you're saying as a business, I could contact Local 290 and get some qualified workers?
Yes.
So same website, ua290.org?
Yep, or 503-691-5700. And there's great resource of people there that, you know, can explain it in depth. And it's a great group to be involved with.
Yeah.
You know, and with that, the contractors also have a group for and a representation for them too, and so they could be a part of a Plumbing and Mechanical Contractors Association.
Oh, okay. So a different local.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's not even a local, it's just part of our local.
Oh, I see. So just a separate group.
So we cater to the contractors, to the workers.
That's great.
So earlier we were talking about right-to-work states and legislation that's going into effect there that gives employees the option to not pay into their dues. But you were talking about this training program. Is that something that the dues goes to cover, is these magnificent training facilities?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And so the benefit might also be a higher quality of work coming out of employees
yep.
that have gone through an 8,000-hour apprenticeship of on-the-job training plus the classroom hours.
Mm-hmm. That is great.
Right. There's actually incentives through our hall right now. We've waived all the class fees for even journeyman classes. And as an incentive, if you do 24 hours a year of continuing education, you get a reimbursement check for that, which it varies depending on how many people qualify for the money, but it's always at least $500. And it comes in about the end of November, so it's always perfect for around Christmas time.
So that sounds like a great process. I mean, basically, let's say I'm an apprentice, I'm working, I go through the program, now I've got a regular job, and I'm paying part of my dues back for the education I received as well as for future generations. That sounds like a great sustainable model.
So on top of the education and the quality work that's coming out of this, they also encourage competition. There's an apprenticeship competition at Local 290. Is that right?
Yes, I believe this one's going to be held in Hawaii.
Whoa, what's that?
Yeah, there's an apprenticeship competition that they take the best apprentices out of the hall, and then they do a regional, I believe, first. And that regional this year is in Hawaii, and they're going to be tested on the skills that they learned on the job.
Nice. So,
What sort of skills are those? What is the competition like?
It's a lot of, they give you puzzles, say build this. A lot of it's tests like welding tests. They see who can be the best welder, which Local 290 had number two in the U.S. So,
great.
Wow.
Yeah, that was 4 years ago, I believe. So. Something like that.
And just to clarify, there's no age restriction on being an apprentice, is there?
Actually, 18 years or older.
18 years or older. Okay, so minimum age. So anybody who's maybe out of work looking for a change of occupation, they could give you guys a call.
Their best bet is to call the 503-691-5700, and that's the front desk, and they can appoint somebody to you, answer any questions you have, but we're more than willing to talk to everybody.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Todd and Will, for joining us here in the studio. Again, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 Labor Radio. We're going to close with just a couple of announcements. Nick?
I've got an announcement right here. This is about the Labor Note School in Portland coming up on Saturday, April 13th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Amid layoffs, legislative union busting, cuts to education and social services, unemployment, foreclosures, rising student debt, working people are rebuilding solidarity and fighting back. The registration cost is $10, and that includes lunch.
That is a lot of issues. So that's a wide variety of topics. I'm sure that's got to hit some of you guys. So if you're interested, go ahead and register at www.bit.ly/troublemakerschool. And that will be at the Airport Way. Address is 16021 Northeast Airport Way. Just $10, great education, 9 to 5 on April 13th. And that is all we have for you today at this Labor Radio show.
Thanks for tuning in to Labor Radio.
Hey, thanks for having us.
The time is 6:30, and you are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. And this KBU program has been made possible in part by KBU Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Southwest Washington Carpenters Local 156, whose goal is to organize workers, provide a safe work environment, ensure livable wages, and elevate the moral and social condition of its members. Information online at ubc156.org. So please stay tuned next for Prison Pipeline.
In conjunction with March Music Moderne, A Different Nature presents a live broadcast from Merrillhurst University, A Soldier's Tale, Igor Stravinsky's iconic masterpiece, plus recent music it has inspired, including three movements from Wynton Marsalis, A Fiddler's Tale. Tune in to A Different Nature Monday, March 18th, for a special three-hour installment beginning at 7 p.m., KBOO is a proud media sponsor of March Music Moderne 2013. Full info on this and all events at marchmusicmoderne.org.
You are about to cross the border.
KBOO Community Radio continues the broadcast of the 2013 Illahi Lecture Series on Tuesday, March 19th, when we broadcast a talk by John Stauber.
Founder of the Center of Media Democracy, John Stauber is an independent writer, organizer, and activist. He has co-authored 6 books, including the bestsellers Toxic Sludge is Good for You, Trust Us, We're Experts, and New York Times bestseller Weapons of Mass Deception. In 1993, he founded the nonprofit Center for Media and Democracy in Madison.
John will be speaking at the First Congregational Church in Portland, and KBOO will broadcast the talk live at 7 p.m. Tuesday, March 19th. More information can be found at kboo.fm/Illahee2013.
KBOO Community Radio turns 45 this year, and our first 2013 membership drive starts on the 21st. Help make reaching our $99,000 fundraising goal a little easier by offering a matching donation of at least $500 for us to use on air during the drive. Matches are really great motivators to entice our non-contributing listeners to donate, so please email membership@kboo.org if you would like to offer a match or have any questions. Or call 503-231-8032 and ask for the membership department to plan your spring drive matching gift today.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Hello, and welcome to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Peter Pinzel, and I'm here tonight with Adam Katrumbis, Care Link Supervisor, and Heather Salek, Employment Program Manager with Cascade AIDS Project, or CAP, a nonprofit in the Portland metro area whose mission is... Let's just get into it. Heather, please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about the organization.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. My name's Heather Salek, and I manage an employment program at Cascade AIDS Project called Working Choices. We help people